This is American Dissident Voices. This is a program speaking for Americans who believe in freedom rather than in political correctness, who value quality above equality, and are willing to do whatever must be done to restore America to racial and moral health and her public institutions to sanity and integrity. This is a program speaking for Americans who dissent from the United States government's policies of multiculturalism and enforced diversity and globalism. This program is the voice of America's dissidents who are speaking out to America's patriots and to patriots of our Western civilization around the world in order that we may learn together and work together for a better future for us all.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week there have been some astounding developments in the Ernst Zundel case and in other matters relating to Jewish power. And here with us to discuss those developments is one of the foremost experts on those subjects and the official media spokesman on the Zundel case, Mr. Mark Weber, director of the Institute for Historical Review. Welcome to our microphones once again, Mark.
Yeah, thanks again, Kevin. It's always a pleasure.
It was very good to see you, along with one of the speakers, Paul Fromm, and so many National Alliance members meeting and networking at the American Renaissance Conference last month.
Yes, it was. It was a very good spirit, and it was always good seeing you and seeing other National Alliance people there. And I think it was very valuable, not nearly for what people heard, but as you say, for the networking that took place.
While we were there, I gave you a copy of the late Revelo Oliver's book, The Jewish Strategy, which you said you hadn't had a chance to see up until that time. Have you had a chance to read it yet?
Yes, I did. I read it on the plane flying back to California from the conference, and it's a great book. Revelo Oliver, I think, at just about his best. It's a very good one-volume, not-too-lengthy look at the Jewish strategy through the ages, from the perspective of a man who's just about uniquely qualified to write on this subject. You know, the recent discussion over the Mel Gibson film has brought up for a lot of people the contrast or the hostility that's existed in over time, on occasion anyway, between Christian and Jewish interests in history. But one of the values of this book by Revelo Oliver is to show that this same tension, this same strife has existed in non-Christian societies as well, and it's not unique to Christian societies. Very often in the context of the Gibson film, a number of Jewish commentators have said, well, you see, the problem of anti-Semitism is really rooted in Christianity, and that's why the Gibson film is really dangerous. Well, that's really inaccurate. That's just wrong, because the same tension and the same problems, the same difficulties that we've seen in Christian history, in Christian Europe and in the United States to some degree, has also been true wherever Jews have existed in large numbers in non-Christian societies as well. Right now, of course, obviously in the Arab Muslim world, but as Oliver points out, because he was uniquely qualified in the Roman and Hellenic world before Christianity was really a factor.
It's an important book. I hope you'll be able to give it some publicity.
Well, I think we will.
Before we get into the latest developments in the case of Ernst Zundel, the historical revisionist, pacifist, and prisoner of conscience in Canada, who's been jailed for over a year now because of his historical and political views, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about how Ernst himself is doing.
Well, that's a good question. You know, it's just outrageous, the treatment. He's been in solitary confinement. Now, he is permitted to make collect calls out from the jail, and he does write letters, and he receives letters. But there's a great deal about his treatment, just outrageous. You know that the light in his cell is never turned off. He is never permitted to sleep in darkness. That alone is just seems like a chicanery, a stupid thing to weaken him or whatever. He's deprived of many of the medicines or herbs and vitamins that he has been taking over the years. And that's not good for him. He's complained about this. His attorney's complained about this. He's not permitted the use of a pen. He has to use a pencil. I don't know the pretext under which that particular stupidity is imposed on him. But he has to. He doesn't have a real desk to operate from to use. It's a humiliating and trying and psychologically harmful treatment that he's been getting over this past year, and all in a case of a man, treatment of a man who is not even charged with a crime.
Are all of the detainees in this so-called detention center treated in the same way, or is
no? It's normally a detention center for people who are whose immigration status, for one reason or another, is not clear. And the treatment of Zindel is unique or special because he's a so-called national security risk. And there's very, very few individuals over the last several years who have been treated as a national security risk in this way. So the treatment of him is of one that's only applied to a very small number of people. The only individuals who've been treated this way in the last few years have been like people with noted ties to terrorist groups, or there's some really substantive or much at least stronger reason to be held, and that's just not the case with Aaron Zindel.
It sounds especially that keeping him in under glaring lights all the time, it sounds almost like some sort of torture.
Yes, well,
I mean, it's the sort of thing you hear about in these films about American soldiers captured by the communist Chinese in the 50s.
Right, right. I mean, it can't help but be psychologically wearing over a long period of time for an entire year like that. That's certainly true. Maybe there is some regulation that permits this thing, but I can't see what possible justification could be cited for this kind of treatment of him. And again, I mean, he's not even permitted a pen. He has to use his little stubby pencils. It's just ridiculous. I mean, he writes letters. He has a lot of time, of course, to write letters, and they're all written in his handwritten in pencil on this scraps of paper that he has.
I received one of his pencil written letters along with a beautiful drawing he made with those very same pencils.
That's right. Yeah.
I've received a report off your Institute for Historical Review Newswire that three U.S. congressmen are now working on the Zindel case. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I got that news from Aaron's wife, Ingrid, and of course she's having to take a tremendous burden in this whole case since the arrest of her husband. In addition to what she used to do, she now has to supervise this whole legal campaign as well. But she doesn't want to give any names, understandably, because, of course, congressmen are subject to pressure under re-election. This year is a re-election year. But she says that she has been yelling and screaming and cajoling and pressuring, whatever, figuratively, of course, to get congressmen to go into this case. Now, this brings up an interesting point. First of all, they may not do anything publicly, but Ingrid Rimland is a U.S. citizen. And so because she's a U.S. citizen, she has certain rights. And her rights were violated. The arrest of Zindel on the 5th of February of last year was just unbelievable because it's almost unheard of for a person who's going through the normal track, as Aaron Zindel was, to become a naturalized citizen or to become have a legal status in this country, who's married to an American citizen, simply to be picked up and dumped over the border as he was. Now, because she's a U.S. citizen, she's calling on her congressman to help in this case because of that violation of her rights and because of the precedent, dangerously, that this sets up for other Americans as well. Now, again, we don't know how brave ultimately people will be, but it brings up an important point, and that is that much more can be done within the system than many people often realize. It's not a black and white situation where every congressman is corrupt or weak or compliant and unable to do anything. An example of that was the Congressman Jim Traficant stuck his neck out for John Demjanjuk, and it was because of his intervention, ultimately, that played a very important role in getting Demjanjuk brought back to the United States. There's a few congressmen that do speak out, for example, courageously, I think, on the Iraq war against the power of the establishment, and Ron Paul of Texas comes to mind. So there are some exceptions. But anyway, I really can't say anything more of detail about what's happening, but it is encouraging that for the first time in the past year, three congressmen are helpfully looking into and working on this case.
Well, that is very good news indeed. The IHR also publicized the fact that another establishment newspaper in Canada has now come out, at least to some extent, in favor of Zundel. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's a really important development. The leading newspaper of Canada, the most influential paper, it's like the New York Times of Canada, is the Globe and Mail, published in Toronto. And it's a very old, venerable paper. It's been around for a long time, and it speaks with a great authority. And when it comments editorially, its voice is listened to. Well, it published an editorial in the edition of March 6th, and in fact the editorial came along with a long article about the Zundel case by their legal affairs writer, Kirk Murren, who interviewed Zundel, and the article, just by laying out the facts of the case, was sympathetic. I mean, the article wasn't intentionally sympathetic, but just the more people know about the case, the more the facts are known about the case, the more any objective person, I think, will see the injustice that's being carried out against him. Anyway, the editorial came out, and the editorial strongly affirmed, as some others have had, some other periodicals have in Canada as well, that he's being held unjustly on a pretext. Now, they're not flattering to Zundel. They regard him as a nut and an obnoxious fellow, but the point is, and this is the important thing, they acknowledge that the treatment of Zundel is a dangerous thing for everybody in Canada, that there's no real valid justification that for the claim that he's a threat to the national security of Canada. It says he's held on a bogus, quote, guilt by association pretext. The editorial said he poses no risk to people or property. And the paper pointed out what I and Paul Fromm and Ingrid Rimland and others have pointed out, that Zundel's never been charged with a violent crime. He doesn't urge any others to commit violence. And the paper finally concluded, the real danger to Canadians, it said, does not come from individuals like Zundel, but, quote, from a government that casually discards their most precious rights. And that carries a lot of weight. Now, of course, an editorial like this doesn't itself free Zundel, but it makes it a lot easier for those people who do hold power, the judges and prosecutors and others in this case, to act with justice and common sense to release him or do what's right, because they can always sort of refer back to a voice as authoritative as Toronto's Globe and Mail.
Indeed. Is your interpretation of that editorial that they were actually calling for freedom for Zundel?
They're saying he's being held unjustly. I mean, that's clear. They say that in the editorial. That's just obvious. I mean, Canada has no compelling reason to hold this man, and he's being held, really, I mean, ultimately, because Canadian Jewish groups are furious at Zundel and don't forgive him for the victory he had in the long, drawn-out legal battle that he fought against these Jewish groups back in the 1980s that actually increased the rights of all Canadians as a result of his legal battle, an archaic law that made it a crime to circulate what was called false news, was ultimately thrown off the books by the Canadian Supreme Court, and Zundel ultimately was vindicated. The Supreme Court of Canada ultimately affirmed the arguments that he and his attorneys had been making for years. And I witnessed it personally. These Jewish groups in Canada just would not rest. They were absolutely determined to get him, and the proof of that was, even though he, through this legal action, made it possible legally to publish booklets and other things in Canada questioning the Holocaust story, these same Jewish groups came right around and then tried to get him punished for circulating these very same things on the internet. I mean, it's like a double jeopardy. It's incredible.
Unbelievable.
The main thing was Zimbel had reprinted a booklet called Did 6 Million Really Die? And finally, it became unquestionably legal in Canada as a result of his legal action. But these same groups then came around and said, no, he's got to be punished because this same booklet appears on the website that's actually headquartered or centered in the United States of America. It's unbelievable. And the sheer malice, the spirit of revenge that animates these people was obvious in the hearings in Canada, at which I was one of the witnesses who testified on behalf of Aaron Zundel in Toronto.
If Zundel were freed in Canada, what would his status be? I mean, he would still face the difficulty of getting back to his wife in the United States, would he not?
I was just going to say it's a double-pronged difficulty. He has to get out of jail in Canada, and he has to be able to come back to the United States, because when he was deported in February of 2003, the U.S. government kicked him out along with the declaration that he wasn't legally permitted to come back to the United States for 20 years. Now, that's why it's very important that Ingrid and his wife and other people are working on this case here on the United States level as well. It's unclear what would happen if he was just suddenly released. I suppose he could go to some third country, but what the Zionist Jewish groups in Canada are demanding is that Canadian officials put him on an airplane and send him off to Germany, where he would be promptly put in jail in that country on the basis of these strange laws that exist there, these anti-free speech laws that make it a crime to question one chapter of history, namely the Jewish Holocaust story. So that's why it's really important that this battle be fought not only on the north side of the U.S.-Canadian border, but also on this side as well.
Now, the anti-neocon radicals at Counterpunch magazine, though they certainly would find little to agree with in Ernst Zundel's life's work, have also issued a powerful call for his persecution to end.
Right.
Even stronger than the one from the Globe and Mail, isn't that right?
Right. There was a two-page piece, of course lengthier too than the editorial, by an American writer named Alan Cabell. I think he's on the East Coast now, but he used to live in California. And he's been following the case for some time. The piece is really put in terms of free speech, which is, of course, the main point of the battle right now. But Alan Cabell, Counterpunch, is much better known in its online version. It's widely read, it has a lot of influence, and it's generally leftist in its general outlook. But this article appeared in the print version of the magazine, February 1st to the 15th issue, and much of the article just simply lays out the whole Zundel case, but he does it in a sympathetic way. In fact, the article's headline sort of tells you it's called The Persecution of Aaron Zundel. But the article finally concluded, and this was what Cabell writes, "The persecution of Aaron Zundel has been and continues to be both relentless and utterly ruthless. This most recent and ongoing episode flies in the face of 1,000 years of Anglo-Saxon law. The man may hold provocative views, but he is a committed pacifist. He is guilty only of expressing an unpopular viewpoint. For him to be held in solitary confinement without having even been charged with a crime and without bail for a year while the court proceeds against him is an affront to justice and public decency that goes far beyond anything that Mr. Zundel has to say." Unquote. And that's, in fact, the truth, and it's very gratifying to see in that kind of forum an article of such clarity and eloquence appearing.
Well, I'm glad to see that. People coming from a leftist perspective, also interested in civil liberties and seeing what's done to Zundel as a very great threat to all of our freedoms.
Over the weekend, there were demonstrations on behalf of Zundel. The point is, it was a broader coalition. It is a broadening one, and it's been fortified, as I said, by the willingness of people who really have no real interest, particularly in Aaron Zundel's views about history or Germany or anything else, to support this as his case, because the treatment is a danger to others. But I was going to say, there's a really a broader thing all around the world There's a worldwide coalition against this monster, this tremendous power that is behind the war in Iraq, behind imposing a kind of U.S. and Zionist hegemony everywhere. And that has gotten the support, as everyone knows, broadly all over the world. And that's something that is enormously gratifying. And people may disagree about all sorts of other issues on religion or society or culture or race, but there's a common interest everywhere in opposing these threats to all of our interests. And I think it's vitally important. We've seen this in the worldwide opposition to the Iraq war. This coming together by people who hold views of every possible range, but who nonetheless are outraged at what's going on in the world and are determined to fight this common enemy.
Has your level of hope, Mark, risen for Ernst Sundel now?
Well, not only is my level of hope risen, but more pertinently, Ernst's and that of his wife has also risen. I mean, these recent developments are the most encouraging things that have happened in quite a long time. It was very discouraging, and what still is, that there wasn't much movement for a long time. But these recent developments are encouraging. There's another thing that's happened, too, that I should mention. Some documents that were obtained recently show that the Canadian equivalent or counterpart of the FBI and the CIA, it's called CSIS, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, was colluding with American officials to get Sundel, to find a reason to get him before his arrest more than a year ago.
How did you find that out?
Well, those documents, I believe, were obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. Now, I can't say that for certain, but they have been checked out.
These are internal memoranda?
Internal email messages.
All right.
And on our website, there's a notice which provides a link to the Sundel site, which actually has the text of these documents. But those are important. Again, they don't in and of themselves. Bring the free Sundel, but they do make it more embarrassing for the Canadian authorities and the American authorities to hold him, because they show the political agenda behind the campaign to get Sundel. That's important, because the more people know about this, the more people know about history and about current affairs, not only in this case, but around the world with the Iraq war, with the Israel-Palestine conflict and so forth, the better. And that's why this campaign, this worldwide campaign for enlightenment, which, of course, you play an important role in, is of the utmost importance.
You're listening to American Dissident Voices, brought to you by National Vanguard Books. We'll continue our interview with Mark Weber, Director of the Institute for Historical Review, next week, when we'll explore Ernst Sundel's contributions to Western civilization and human freedom, and the potential positive consequences of Jewish arrogance and miscalculation in this changing world. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free.
You have been listening to a presentation of American Dissident Voices. The program was sponsored as a public service by National Vanguard Books, America's foremost supplier of patriotic books and tapes. You may purchase a high-fidelity audio recording of this program or any earlier program for $12.95 postpaid. In ordering program tapes, be sure to mention the date and the subject of the program and the call letters of this radio station. For $2, we'll send you our newest 72-page illustrated catalog with descriptions and ordering information for more than 600 books and tapes of interest to patriots. Many of the items in the National Vanguard Books catalog are available nowhere else. Our mailing address is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Please write that address down now, because you may not hear this program again on this station. The forces of political correctness do not believe in free speech, and they do not like this program. Our address again is National Vanguard Books, Post Office Box 90, that's 90, Hillsboro, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. Visit us on the internet at www.natvan.com. That's spelled N-A-T-V-A-N.com. Or www.natall.com. That's spelled N-A-T-A-L-L.com. These American Dissident Voices programs are sponsored by donations from listeners like yourself. Please send a donation today to help us keep these programs on the air. This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.